Good evening, everyone. So I think sometimes it's appropriate for this speaker to disclose where he's coming from at the time that he begins to speak. And I feel like for me, this is one of those times. So just before, not too long before I came on Zoom tonight, I received a message that was critical of my action. And I felt it was unfairly critical of me. But who knows, you know, if the sender felt that way or not. It had quite an impact, and which I'm still feeling upset, you know, about receiving such a message and being criticized, feeling criticized, maybe say feeling criticized, and also at the same time, like triggering some old stuff about being criticized, and all of which adds up to a kind of upset, you know, and not quite feeling as grounded as I would like to be beginning a talk. But it is what's happening. So from that standpoint, noticing it and even expressing it can be valuable. Our practice is really just sitting with what's happening, with what's arising. And if an upset mind is arising, well, that's it, you know. And you know, there's a, of course, it's easy to want some other kind of mind at that time. But facing the upset, the feelings, the mind that's presenting itself, and just staying with that, it's hard to do. It's hard to do when those feelings are strong and kind of flooding you, you know. But still, I don't know any other way, a really upright way to meet, you know, those kind of feelings. Last time I talked here, it was just 2 weeks ago. Usually I only talk once a month, but the calendar didn't cooperate with my intention to only talk once a month this month. So here I am again. And I talked about this theme. My theme was where are the Buddhas coming from? From where do the Buddhas come? And I suggested that they come from stillness, and that we can and that we have an opportunity to, you know, emulate the Buddhas in our sitting practice, sitting in stillness, receiving just this mind and just these feelings in stillness. At least, you know, we can try. It may feel like, well, I'm sitting in stillness, but, you know, it's like the song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi says, outwardly still, but inwardly moving, like a tethered colt, a trapped rat. Yeah, that's kind of how my sitting was today. That's how my sitting was with you. Outwardly still, inwardly, you know, upset. Inwardly moving. But that's how it is sometimes. And, you know, if that's how it is, then that's how it is. Let it be. Let it be that way. Peace has its place. Ease has its place. But I think upset and upset has a place too. When I was talking about I suggested that, you know, we can emulate the Buddhas, right, by sitting still. So that's a good practice. And I mentioned, you know, not making voluntary movements during Zazen as a kind of, basic practice or good place to start. You know, don't scratch your nose, you know, during Zazen. Don't adjust your ears or whatever. So not making these kind of voluntary movements to the extent that's reasonable, right? To the extent that's reasonable and not, unduly stepping on yourself. There's no need for that. But still, to the extent that's reasonable, sitting still. In emulation of the Buddha's practice of sitting still, in the face of, many beings that apparently, according to the story we hear, that didn't want Buddha to sit still and tried to knock him off his seat when he was seeking enlightenment. Or she was seeking enlightenment. And the Buddha decided that sitting still was just a ticket. The best response. So tonight I wanted to talk about, and I suggested, I think, or I meant to suggest in that talk 2 weeks ago, that that the answer to the question, where the Buddhas come from, where do the Buddhas come from, there might be more than one answer to that. And so tonight, I'd like to suggest another answer to that question. And an alternative story about where the Buddhas come from. In this story, comes from a teaching called the Brahmanet Sutra. And this is a kind of little known sutra, kind of obscure. And but it comes to us from China. It was probably written in China. And it's an important underlying text for us because it is the Brahmanet Sutra is the source of what are called the clear mind precepts that we take in this school, the 10 clear mind precepts, sometimes called more sinisterly the 10 grave prohibitory precepts. So the formulation of the 10, clear mind precepts, the 10 clear mind precepts in the Brahmanet Sutra is very close to the 10 clear mind precepts that we take in our, we repeat in our full moon ceremony. And also if we choose to receive the precepts formally that we that we recite in that ceremony. So there are subject of considerable comment, and the Brahmanet Sutra has been commented on extensively over the years by various teachers. So the 10 clear mind precepts are, just to review, not killing, not stealing, not misusing sexuality, not lying, not speaking falsehoods. Sometimes we say it that way. Not abusing intoxicants. Sometimes it's actually, the Brahmanet Sutra says, not selling intoxicants. We go a little farther and we say, actually, say, don't become intoxicated. Don't use intoxicants and don't become intoxicated. So those are the first five. And then there's not slandering others, not praising self at the expense of others, not being avaricious or greedy, not harboring ill will, not carrying around ill will. And the Brahmanet Sutra actually translates it, not harboring ill will and don't avoid making apologies or accepting, I think it says, accepting apologies. To not accept apologies is a violation of the precept. That's interesting. Not harboring will and not accepting apologies from others. And the last of the 10 is not disparaging the triple treasure, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Not in any way denigrating the three treasures, the three jewels of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And the other thing that's important about these, the Brahmanet Sutra, is that this appears at the time that the Mahayana is beginning to take shape, you know, in China. I mean, there's already a shape to it, but it's beginning to become more of a dominant force in China. And it's beginning to become that time when lay men and lay women begin to be offered the precepts. And it's these precepts that are formulated to be offered to lay people. So that's an important aspect of, and important for our Soto Zen tradition, which has a very doesn't try to elevate priests, you know, over lay people. We take exactly the same precepts. Priests and lay people take exactly the same precepts in modern day America, anyway. I'm not sure about Japan. So this is, you know, a kind of story about these precepts is, according to the Theravadan tradition, the way that the precepts came to be is there was this monastic community in India and gathered around Shakyamuni Buddha. And then it came to be that there was some misconduct in the Sangha. So according to the story from the Theravadan tradition, the Pali Canon, the Buddha made a rule in relationship to that misconduct. Say one monk stole something from another monk. Well, then the Buddha made a rule. Don't steal from your fellow monks. Or, you know, a monk in the Sangha spoke publicly about the faults of another monk, and somebody else overheard, I guess, and reported it to the Buddha, or the Buddha heard it, I don't know. And so the Buddha made a rule in relationship to this misconduct, don't do that. And according to the traditional story, this went on and on and on. Lots of rules got formulated. And to the point that in the first council after Buddha's death, a monk named Upali got up and recited 253 rules for the male monks and some 348 for female monks. So anyway, the big story is, or the main story, the point I want to make is that according to that tradition, that tradition of Buddhism, the rules got formulated in relationship to misconduct. They came after the misconduct to correct the misconduct. And what comes to us what comes down to us in the Brahmanet Sutra is a kind of different story. And the different story is that in that understanding, the precepts come before the misconduct. And in fact, the precepts are the source, the wellspring of the Buddhas themselves. They are a kind of origin or spring of the Buddhas themselves, and they come, the Buddhas. So the answer to the question, where do the Buddhas come from, is the Buddhas come from the precepts. And there's an important passage in the text that is quite wonderful, and I'd like to read it to you. So the text says, the radiant adamantine precepts, adamantine means diamond-like. The radiant adamantine precepts are the source of all Buddhas, the origin of all bodhisattvas, the seed of Buddha nature. All sentient beings without exception possess Buddha nature. All those who have mentation, consciousness, form and mind, who have these feelings and these minds, it's like I had some feelings tonight, right? These feelings, and these minds are all encompassed by the Buddha nature precepts. It's precisely because of the ever-present causes in the form of the precepts that there is without fail always an abiding Dharma body. In this way, these 10 pratimokshas appear in the world, and these Dharma rules are received and upheld with reverence by all sentient beings whose original self nature is pure. I'd like to read that again. The radiant adamantine precepts are the source of all Buddhas, the origin of all bodhisattvas, the seed of Buddha nature. All sentient beings without exception possess Buddha nature. All those who have mentation, consciousness, form and mind, who have these feelings and these minds, are all encompassed by these Buddha nature precepts. It is precisely because of the ever-present causes in the form of the precepts that there is without fail always an abiding Dharma body. In this way, these 10 pratimokshas appear in the world, and these Dharma rules are received and upheld with reverence by all sentient beings whose original self nature is pure. So the word pratimoksha literally means liberation from afflictions. Liberation from affliction. So it's the 10 pratimokshas. So those 10 that I recited earlier or said earlier, starting with not killing and ending with not disparaging the triple treasure. Those are the 10 pratimokshas, the 10 causes of liberation from afflictions. And of course, Buddhas, by definition, are liberated from afflictions. That's who Buddhas are. They co-arise with liberated from afflictions. So the implication of this teaching is that, you know, awakening or awakened nature comes from the precepts. And that right conduct, upright conduct, is the wellspring of the Buddhist and the wellspring of us. It's our wellspring too. It maybe takes quite a long time. It took me a long time to embrace this kind of teaching. Maybe it takes a lot of people a long time to embrace this type of teaching, that we come from right conduct. The teaching of the Brahmanette Sutra is quite important, in particularly in Soto Zen, and it influenced Dogen. This sutra influenced Dogen when he wrote an important text called the Kyojukai Mon, an essay on conferring and receiving the precepts. And you may say, well, I don't know anything about that particular text. But in fact, if you have, for those of you, I know a lot of you have never practiced with us in person, but those of you who have practiced in person do know Kyoju Kaimon, because we recite verses from that text in our Bodhisattva ceremony, our full moon ceremony, when we recite the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. So you've heard some of these verses many times, but maybe you didn't know that Dogen wrote those verses to accompany the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. In the full moon ceremony, we recite those precepts, and first we recite the three refuges. The Kokyo recites, I take refuge in Buddha. And we recite, before all beings, with all beings as my witness, immersing body and mind deeply in the way, awakening true mind. And then we recite the second refuge, refuge in Dharma, before all beings, entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. And then the Kokyo finally recites the third refuge, I take refuge in Sangha. And we recite, before all beings, bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrance. Bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrance. So that's the three refuges. And then we recite the three pure precepts. we say, I vow to embrace and sustain right conduct. Right there. I vow to embrace and sustain right conduct. And then the Kokyo recites Dogen's verse from the Kyoju Kaimon. It is the abode of the laws of all Buddhas. It is the source of the laws of all Buddhas. I think you can see how this, if you remember, when I was reading the text from the Brahmanet Sutra, you can see how it tracks with that. The Brahmanet Sutra said, the radiant Adamantine precepts are the source of all Buddhas, the origin of all bodhisattvas, the seed of Buddha nature. Dogen is certainly picking up on that in his verse. We recite the second pure precept, I vow to embrace and sustain all good. And the Kokyo says, it is the teaching of Anyatara, Samyak, Sambodhi, the path of the one who practices and that which is practiced. Anyatara, Samyak, Sambodhi means unsurpassed, perfect enlightenment. And this is also where the Buddhas come from. And this is what they teach. And finally, we recite the third pure precept. I vow to embrace and sustain all beings. And the Kokyo recites with Dogen's verse, it is transcending profane and holy and taking self and others across. And this, of course, is the great vow of the Mahayana, the great bodhisattva vow to not practice for oneself alone, but actually for the welfare of all beings. For the welfare of all beings. And then, in the full moon ceremony and in Jukai ceremony, we recite the 10 clear mind precepts. And Dogen has a verse. The verse we recite is Dogen's verse, and it's after each of the precepts. And I think each of those verses, if you know this teaching from the Brahmanet Sutra of the precepts as the source of the Buddhas, as the origin of the Buddhas, as coming, I guess, kind of first principle. Then when you know that, and then you listen to Dogen's verses, I think you can see how deeply Dogen appreciated that teaching from the Brahmanet Sutra. For instance, in his verse on not being avaricious, not being stingy. The verse is one phrase, one verse. That is the 10,000 things and 100 grasses. One Dharma and one realization is all Buddhas and ancestors. Therefore, from the beginning, there has been no stinginess at all. Therefore, from the beginning, there has been no stinginess at all. So where are the Buddhas coming from? They're coming from no killing, no stealing, no misusing of sexuality, no lying, no intoxication, no slandering, no praising self at the expense of others, not coming from stinginess, not coming from anger or harboring ill will, not coming from disparaging the three treasures, three jewels. So that I see it like this, that the Buddhas are imagining or inviting us. They're inviting us to imagine a world like this. To imagine a world like this, and they're inviting us to align ourselves as close as we can within our limited bodies and minds, as close as we can with that vision, with that great, unsurpassed vision. The Brahman Net Sutra says, the invitation from the Buddhas reads like this. All sentient beings without exception possess Buddha nature. All those who have mentation, consciousness, form, and mind, who have these feelings and these minds, are all encompassed by these Buddha nature precepts. I think this is such an exceptional statement. All those who have these feelings and these minds are encompassed by the Buddha nature precepts. These feelings and these minds that so often seem to run counter to the teaching of the precepts that seem to see these feelings and these minds which see the, well, either can't see the precepts or don't align, or just the way we are, because we do have our karma, don't we? I have my karma of having been criticized a lot, relentlessly, in fact. So when I'm criticized now, I could break the precepts. I could break the precepts. For instance, I could get angry. That would be very possible for me. I have to really check myself. I have to really work hard, very hard, not to get angry in response, not to break the precept of not being angry or not harboring ill will. Because we have our karma. We have our karma, and our karma has a great power. So we need a great power. We need a great other power to work with this karma. And in our tradition, that great other power is the precepts. And they are embracing and sustaining us. They can, if we let them in, they can embrace and sustain us. And they are precious in that way. They're a precious kind of sword, like Manjushri's sword, cutting through our karma, cutting off our karma. The sword, may not always be sharp enough. We may feel like it's not good, or maybe it's too heavy. Maybe that sword, what is that Galahad or somebody had to pull a sword out of a stone or something like that. Yeah. So maybe the sword's too heavy, too hard to wield. But according to our teaching, these precepts are all encompassing. They they're like hugging us, you know. They're like holding us up. And, you know, we really notice when we need them, when things get tough, you know, when we're under assault. We see so much suffering in our world, because people do, you know, because of the strength of karma, because of the power of karma, we absolutely need to. Well, I don't tell you what to do, but anyway, it's to have a countervailing power. This is a great blessing. A great blessing. So, thank you very much. If you want to take a few questions or comments, we can do that now. Will?
Barbara has her hand up.
Barbara, you go ahead.
Thank you. First, I would offer to you, Jim, listen to the cries of the cry regarder, how well he responds in every direction. And may that bodhisattva give you comfort and support. And then what I've learned from what you've shared tonight is the grace and power of Sangha, in that on our own, we think we're okay. We're doing well. We're in alignment with the precepts. And it's only through engaging with others that it gets brought to us where we've fallen out of alignment. And so those criticisms, as much as they harken back to the pain we've endured, that we incorporate in our bodies, they're a gift. They're a gift. They're the gift of helping us see what we don't see because we think we're okay, and where we have an opportunity to bring ourselves back into alignment.
Thank you for extending the teaching. Let's see, Will?
Yeah, thank you, Jim. I've been coming to the Dharma Center for 4 years now, and what I've been noticing that each year I'm looking back, I say, I'm not that person anymore. I don't think that way. I don't act that way. And each year it just keeps evolving. And about keeping the vows, it seems like instead of trying to keep vows, it's kind of like the fruit of sitting. It's not like I have to force myself and keep, I do keep them on the forefront, but it's kind of like becoming more natural each passing year. And the other thing that I was, you were talking about countervailing power. My countervailing power is what I've been doing for the past years, I guess. Gratitude, and immensely gratitude for the Sangha, for sure. And if I go down the line and think of other things I'm grateful for, am I grateful for everything? Am I grateful for the hurts? Am I grateful for regrets? Am I grateful for misunderstandings? And what I do now is when I get those feelings, I nip it, I say, thank you for that hurt. And then immediately I still feel the sting. and I'll keep repeating the thank you, and then it'll neutralize almost, instead of tainting my whole day or even my whole week, it'll abbreviate it, because eventually every pain and hurt is going to go away. It's a matter of time. But opening the door to other perspectives by being grateful for all things has been a doorway for me, and it's something that I do every day.
Well, thank you, Bill. You know, listen to what everybody says, because there's so many different approaches, and coping. I guess you'd say coping, ways of coping, ways of meeting painful circumstances. And what works for Will may work for you. What works for Barbara may work for you. What works for me may work for you. So, yeah, this is the gift of Sangha. One thing that happens with me is that my breath, in the face of pain, my breath gets up in my chest. I notice that I can't get down. My stomach's all roiled up, you know, and I can't relax it. So then I start breathing up in my chest, and I like in our zazen today, I was working to try to get down in my stomach, but I. It was really hard because his stomach was all roiling around, and it was. That's where I was feeling the upset, you know. So, I was just working to like, can I get down in my stomach? Can I breathe from my hara, you know, or from my? Can I get my diaphragm involved again? Because it didn't seem, because my breath was really shallow, you know, and I don't think I really got down there. Actually, during that period of Zazen, but maybe a little bit. I must have got a little bit because, you know, I didn't run away and not give the talk, so, which part of me felt like doing. Well, Barry has his hand up.
Hi, I'm on mobile in Washington State, so sorry if it sounds crappy.
Oh,
but you know, for me, I have a lot of experience feeling like crap, so I'm kind of an expert. But what I found is when I try to change the feeling, it generally makes it worse. But when I just kind of let it be, it goes away a lot faster. Somehow I don't learn that lesson very quickly. I kind of have to relearn it each time, but I find it's true each time. Like, you know, if something that happened in life and it'll create kind of like an emotional uproaring of energy. And my first instinct will be to try to make that feeling go away, which doesn't work. You know, I'll try to like analyze the situation, look at it in a different perspective, try to convince myself it doesn't really bother me, blah, blah, blah. But eventually I'll be like, oh yeah, let me just be with it. And then it'll melt away. But you know, you can't like trick yourself. Like, I really want it to go away, but I'm going to pretend to be with it. And then it'll make it go away. I mean, that works for me at least. I don't know if it's universal, but it's definitely an effective approach for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Meg?
I'm glad you did not run away and not give the talk. I think that your vulnerability at the beginning of the talk about what you were going through lent a power to your talk that was... And it was an amazing talk and a helpful talk. And I'm glad you didn't run away.
thank you. I'm glad I didn't run away too.
And Jim, in times like this, I always like to remember, it's not about what it's about.
Yeah, and I like to remember, it's not about what we think it's about. Thank you, Millard. Or it's not what we think it is about. What we think it's about may well be wrong. Richard.
Sorry about that, I was still muted. I liked your talk about the precepts, and yeah, I look forward to the study on Thursday about them. You know, I often feel, you know, I guess there's this gut reaction when you hear precepts. For me, is to, oh no, don't take them, you know, because not take them, but you know, there's a fear of the power of them, you know, the hurdle, you know, it's like the, you know, the vow to save all beings, you know, but I like how you put it as just, this is a ongoing thing. They're, you know, they're vows, the reminder, and almost like guardrails, right? I don't know if you mean it that way, but you know, it's something to slowly work up to and something that isn't easy. And so I like that you put it that way. And yeah, I like the talk, you know, and, you know, for a person who, for me, you know, who's, I think you said, I forgot what was one of the chants you said, where you like, it's like a chained horse, you know. I often feel like that, you know. I don't know. I think maybe a lot of people feel like their thoughts are like that. I remember a person told me one time at work, I was walking around, and you know, they say, oh, you seem so peaceful walking around. And I smiled at them. I said, oh, this is just a container. It's all madness in here. You know, that's what I thought when you thought about the horse and the chained rat. You know, there's this, you know, trying to achieve this, you know, the being upright and sitting, you know, for me, hopefully I'm like, sooner or later, I'll go from the outside to the inside and sort of like, calm that horse, or you know, that rat, you know, just a little bit, you know, or in the least make me notice that it's that they're there, you know. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Richard. Thank you for bringing up fear of the precepts, or you know, you could also extend that to fear of Buddhism. You know, you could, so with the precepts, you know, what I recommend is if you're, you know, if you want to study the precepts, don't try to swallow, you know, 16 all at once. You know, maybe take the easiest one you could find, like maybe not stealing. Maybe you don't really steal, but then, you know, look at not stealing and see if there, because another way that we put that is, we express that as not taking what is not given. And when you look at it that way, then it actually becomes more subtle. And you look at, you know, what I'm taking really being given? And, you know, one of my first teachers says, you know, don't even take a pen or a pencil away from work, kind of thing. You know, so not taking what is not given is a way of really kind of looking at what we're, you know, how we're relating to other people and what we're trying to get from them, and you know, So you can just take one like that. You're not stealing, you're not going into the store and, taking things off the shelf, but you could look at the ways that you might be needing to not make assumptions about what other people are offering to you.
That's a good one. Thank you, Jim.
Peter?
Let's not make assumptions about what running away looks like. The only people I know who didn't run away tonight were you and the person who gave you feedback that you didn't like. Running away has a lot of different appearances. And, I'm probably running away right now, leaving this comment.
Well, that brings me to the topic of running away. I think we should run away from Zoom right now because it's getting late. So next week we'll have a silent sitting. I think we have that on the schedule. So I'd encourage everyone to come, and we talk a lot on Monday nights. And next week I think we can just come and sit together in silence and chant the refuges at the end. We used to love that practice at the Dharma Center, and we'll do it here on Zoom, I believe, next week.